Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to tonight's edition of Jump Right In, a production of 1111 Broadcasting. This is Splash, and my pond is open. We had a great show last night, but if you tried to tune in, Blog Talk Radio was having technical difficulties, so you wouldn't have been able to listen to the show live. The show did record, so if you want to catch it, go to our blog and catch the archived edition. We covered Netanyahu's speech and John Kerry's delusion. We touched on ISIS recruiting and the Iranian negotiations, if you can actually call it that. We also pondered why Obama would even begin to suggest reducing the filibuster power on the minority over legislation, while his party is actually in the minority. Lots of good stuff there, so if you missed it, go to the blog, 1111broadcasting.com, and catch up. Of course, you can check out any of the past episodes of Jump Right In on our blog, 1111broadcasting.com, or listen to them right on your Facebook page. Just like us on Facebook, 1111 Broadcasting, listen to the shows right there just by clicking on the arrow right on the belly flopper. You'll know what I mean when you go to the page, 1111 Broadcasting. Tonight, we're going to talk about my second favorite state, California. It's actually like four countries in one, but we're going to talk about California tonight and how its base of greenies is at odds with their own Smurf governor. We'll also have some IRS power abuse stuff tonight. That's always fun. And of course, our Nobel Peace Prize winning president wants Congress to give him the authority to go kick some ass with our combat troops. No need to adjust your radio dials. You heard me right. Combat troops on the ground. And while our troops may be so close, guess who is still using chemical weapons on his own people? Remember that red line in the sand? Or did it blow away in a series of sandstorms? Well, I guess since California is involved in tonight's show, I should go ahead and do the disclaimer warning now. Okay, here we go. The following program may contain subject matter that is sexually graphic in nature and may offend some people. Listener discretion is advised. You have been warned. Anyway, so much to cover, so little time. The number to call, 215-383-5730. That's 215-383-5730. I encourage you to jump right in. Wade carefully if you must. But remember, in my pond, everyone swims at their own risk. We'll be here for the next hour doing the thing I love to do most, talking smack about politics. Now, if you want to chime in, just give us a call. I promise that I don't bite. Well, I do, but I don't, but I do, but I will, and you'll love it. You can jump right into the show chat room tonight. You'll need a free login from Blog Talk Radio. It takes less than a minute. Put in your email address, pick a screen name, and voila. And a password. And voila, you can jump right into the chat room, pick on people, even pick on me. And if you hear me pause, it's probably because I'm checking out what's going in the chat room. People do try to distract me there. Now, if you want to participate in the show, put your stamp on tonight's episode, Wade Into My Pond, then, by all means. Dial the number right there on the show page, 215-383-5730. That's 215-383-5730. I would love to talk to you. Put me to the test. It'll be your time to shine. Now, before we get into tonight's show, let me tell you about Choice Mattress and Furniture. When it comes to mattresses and bedding, David Ritter and the staff at Choice Mattress and Furniture know their stuff. I took my whole family to Choice Mattress, and everything was considered. Our weight, our height, our age, even the way each one of us sleeps. The right mattress was personally selected for each of us, and now my whole family sleeps in great comfort all night long on beds from Choice Mattress, and yours can too. Every mattress carried by Choice Mattress comes with a 5, 10, or even 15-year, 100% full replacement warranty, not a prorated limited warranty like other stores. Chances are, if you bought a bed in the Daytona Beach area in the last 20 years, then you bought it from David. With over 20 years of experience, David knows beds. And you should see all the other fine lines of furniture Choice Mattress has for every room in your home. Go see David and the fine folks at Choice Mattress and Furniture, located on the corner of LPGA and Nova Road. That's 1501 North Nova Road in Holly Hill. If you just have questions, give them a call. It's 386-226-BEDS. That's 386-226-2337. Choice Mattress, simply the best choice you can make in your sleep. Now, before we have fun at California's expense, I want to talk about something that I thought was really cool. And it was a little article I ran across at Reuters. Reuters picked this up. The number of U.S. drivers under the influence of alcohol is steadily dropping, but the use of illegal drugs by drivers is on the rise. So cool, not so cool. This is new data from the U.S. Transportation Department survey. Now, while about 8% of drivers during weekend nighttime hours had alcohol in their system, only about 1% were found with breath alcohol content higher than the legal limit in every state, 0.08%. Now, according to the survey, this was a survey done by the Department of Transportation National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. They got so many letters in their acronym, I'm not going to say them. Now, this is good news, folks, for the safety of everyone on the road, but it's bad news for municipalities because they make a crapload of money when you're hit with a DUI. Anyway, I guess they'll have to find another way. Oh, wait, there's more. This marked, of course, a reduction from the 30% in 2007 survey and down 80% from the first survey back in 1973. Do you realize in 1973, when Jimmy Carter was president, 80% of the drivers on the road were drunk? What's that tell you? Anyway, despite that, the use of illegal drugs and medicines that can impair driving capability is on the rise. The number of weekend nighttime drivers who were found with drugs in their system jumped from 16.3% in 2007 to 20% in 2014. Most of those people got their pills through their Obamacare plan. Just kidding, folks. The number of drivers with marijuana in their system grew by nearly 50%. Now, folks, a stoner will tell you that weed does not impair your senses. But if you've ever talked to a stoner while you yourself are not stoned, then you would know this to be untrue. Plus, how in the world can you be expected to control a moving vehicle with 8 open bags of munchies in your lap while you're giggling your ass off? It can't be done. So anyway, the survey also found that marijuana users are more likely to find themselves in an accident, mostly because they are more likely to be in groups at higher risk of crashes. That's what the survey said. I'll tell you. I mean, they may be in more accidents, but what's a bumper car accident? These guys drive at 3 miles an hour. How can it be so bad? But anyway, that's what the survey said. So there you have it. Drunk driving way down, stone driving way up. Speaking of pot, let's talk California. They have always seemed stoned, and here's another story that makes it seem so. Oh, man, this is so crazy. Jerry Brown won re-election this past November, aided by a left-leaning California electorate in a race so lopsided he barely bothered to campaign. He won 58% to 42% without even trying. And in his victory speech, he said, "We are going to go in a very progressive but fiscally responsible direction." Well, apparently, the blue electorate is not so happy with how Jerry defines progressive when it comes to energy. In the 70s, you know, the environmental movement had no bigger political hero than California Governor Jerry Brown. He cracked down on polluters, ended tax breaks for oil companies, and promoted solar energy, which is, of course, come so far today. Now, 40 years later, in his second go-round as governor, conservationists are amongst his harshest critics. Now, ain't that a kick in the head? Climate change is one of Brown's key issues, and he said in his inaugural address last month, that his goal is to have California get, last month when he won his second term, his goal is to have California get half of its energy from renewable resources within 15 years. You got that, folks? Half in 15 years. But because he refused to ban hydraulic fracturing for oil, protesters or fractivists have dogged Brown for more than a year, even interrupting his speech at the Democratic Party convention last spring. First of all, I love that word, fractivist. You know I'm going to use that word so many different ways. I love that word. I love AP for putting that word in this story. It has such a whacked out ring to it. And as I have always said, these green nutbags put the mental in environmentalists, and now they are throwing in their little hissy. Climate leaders, that was so not nice. Climate leaders don't frack, said Casey Siegel of the Center for Biological Diversity. A group that praises Brown's programs to boost renewable energy. The oil and gas boom threatens to undercut all of their progress that our state may make on climate. And they are going all out. Fracking opponents have planned their latest protest so far, a rally Saturday in Brown's hometown of Oakland that they hope will attract thousands. More than 100 environmentalists and community groups have signed on, and protesters are being bussed in from around the state. Bussed in. Yeah, those buses don't do anything to our environment. They don't emit, I think they're nuclear buses, so they're completely clean. Now, some began their protest Friday right outside of Brown's San Francisco office. Police said that 12 people were arrested when they briefly blocked public access to the building. Oh, my. These days, Brown rarely engages with his critics. He barely campaigned for re-election last year and holds few public events. He just doesn't have to. Now, bottom line, he really didn't need these lunatics. What were they going to do? What were they going to do? Vote for an Elmo? Not a chance. The exception is appearances promoting the use of solar energy, and I know Jerry Brown loves solar energy, or other environmental issues. Still, Brown has noted that Californians do love their freeway and gas-guzzling vehicles. Now, Brown did not have to drive that stick right into their eyes, but he could, so he did, and this is positively beautiful. In response to a reporter's questions last week, Brown said, I love this. Brown said, as we speak, protesters and non-protesters are burning up gasoline that is being shipped from Iraq, from Russia, from Venezuela, and all sorts of other places, and coming in on trains. So whatever we don't do here, we are going to get from somewhere else. Until we get that moratorium on driving, which I haven't heard proposed yet. Duh! Get these facts about California, folks. You would never know it if I weren't telling you. California is the number 3 oil producer in the nation and has added an average of 300 wells each month for the past decade. That's 36,000 brand new wells over the last 10 years. That's about half of those new wells that use hydraulic fracturing, which involves forcing fluids, sand, and chemicals underground to break rock formations and extract oil and gas. Of course, my audience already knows this because I did a whole show back on December 9th, Who's the King of Oil Now? You can hear it in the archives at 1111broadcasting.com. This shameless little plug was brought to you by Splash. Anyway, a fifth of California's oil-producing oil production comes through fracking. One-fifth, folks, through fracking. Oh, the shame. Now, through a spokesman, Brown declined to comment on protests, referring questions to the California Department of Conservation. In a prepared statement, Chief Deputy Director Jason Marshall avoided using the term fracking, instead calling it well stimulation. Oh my God. The sexual imagery here is so stimulating. Come here, baby. Let me stimulate your well. Just the whole idea of forcing something, some foreign fluids, deep into this well of stimulation is so incredibly erotic. I could have fun with this all night long. I always knew there was something I loved about this oil business. This is it. We have no direct evidence. Marshall went on to say, we have no direct evidence that any harm has been caused by the practice in California. We believe the regulations we've created atop existing well construction standards will protect the environment. Wait, what's that rumble? Oh no, another earthquake. Isn't an earthquake by definition a fracture of the earth? I'm no geologist. Actually, I only got a C in Rocks for Jocks, while all the football bruisers aced the damn class. But we have no direct evidence is a bit weak. Still, I like taking my chances for cheap domestic oil and stimulating erotic imagery. Of course, that is easy for me to say since I don't live in California, where at any moment they could be pounded by the big one and slide right into the ocean of love. My goodness. Okay, Slash, collect yourselves. Whew. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, we got a caller. What do you want to bet? They're from California. Caller, you're on the air. Where are you from? And how'd you hear about the show? What's your name?
This is Melinda from California.
No
and
kidding.
I listened to Blog Talk Radio, and I heard you. I heard your show. Okay, let's talk California.
It was calling to you, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Okay, first of all.
Calling you in. All right.
Yeah.
First of all.
All right. First of all, about the fracking.
Yeah,
it's been going on for decades. It's nothing new.
No, but it has improved over the time.
Yeah, but the biggest problem with, and I'm not an environmentalist, and I'm not, I kind of think that, you know, that they get a little carried away sometimes. But I think there's a bigger problem here, and it has to do with where they're dumping the wastewater. The difference between exempt and non-exempt wells to dump it in. And that's
right.
Where anytime you have any kind of oil or big industry, they will always push the envelope. You know, they are told, hey, this is where you're supposed to dump it. Well, they didn't. They dumped it into wells that were connected to aquifers that has drinkable water that is used for farming, for animals. And California is suffering the worst drought that we've ever had. And so now you're taking more drinking water away because of fracking. So, yeah, people get mad about it. You know, I'm all for, you know, more energy sources for America to be reliable. But it has to be a two-way street. If they want to frack, because there's better ways to do it, and it could be done safely and everything. This is where they crossed the line again. They went and they broke the rules. You know,
okay, well,
and here's the thing. There was the regulation. They agreed to it. They had it's all in agreement and everything, and then what? They just completely ignore it.
Well, hang on a second, because from the source that I have, California regulators have also authorized oil companies to inject production fluids, and here they go again, tell them to stop. Anyway, regulators have also authorized oil companies to inject production fluids, that's the waste,
right,
into federally protected aquifers more than 2,500 times, risking contamination of underground water. So that was actually approved by regulators there in California.
Yeah,
of course,
so
that
makes
was from
me ask one question.
Press.
That's from
Associated Press Review. So, you know, those scientists over at Associated Press, that, you know, I'm not sure they're so credible. But what question?
Who's being paid off?
Oh, no question about that.
You know,
that was my point line here.
Yeah, that's to me, it's, you know, you didn't need to pump it into those wells. There was an area down by Bakersfield, which is in the dreaded Central Valley of California. There was a town there. And
right.
One of the wells there that provides all their drinking water was contaminated. They didn't have water. In the height of summer, they didn't have water. They were pumping water in. They were trucking it in for a community.
Well, what it says here is state officials are conducting a series of fracking reviews as California sets up its first comprehensive regulation framework after Brown signed a bill imposing new rules. I like Brown. I mean, he's very environmentally concerned. There's no question about it. He's like Jeb Bush was in Florida, the most environmentally friendly governor we ever had, believe it or not. Most people don't believe that, but it's true. Oil producers say that they will be the toughest regulations in the nation. Environmentalists say that they were watered down after legislators caved to oil companies. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, you're from California, but hasn't the California legislature been dominated by Smurfs for decades?
Right.
Yeah,
and guess who the biggest lobbyist is in California?
Oil?
Yep.
Yeah, and see, I actually have figures on that, and I'll tell you, the amazing thing to me is that the Elmos get the rap for being bought out by oil on a consistent basis, that they are groveling at the feet of oil producers, and I'm sure they are, I know they are, but how does this escape face it, California is the bluest state in the country.
Mm-hmm.
It's the bluest state in the country.
No, it's not.
Massachusetts
is.
Okay. All right. Well, that's what it does. But be that as it well, Massachusetts now had had. I don't know if they still do, but had a Republican governor. I know you guys did, but he was more. I don't know what you call him. I don't know what you call Arnold. He was a Terminator. You know.
I think the Republicans would call him a moderate.
Yeah. In any case, I mean, this is a prime example that it's not just the Elmos that got bought out by oil or banks or Wall Street. It's the Smurfs as well.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, that's the thing that kind of concerns me when I see stories like this, because that's exactly where I was going with this. Because now, to give Brown kudos, okay, he wants to ramp up targets set on the 2006 global warming law signed by Arnold Schwarzenegger. Mm-hmm. And last year he persuaded lawmakers to devote revenues from fees charged to polluters to help fund the proposed $68 billion bullet train, which he, of course, touts as an environmentally friendly approach to transportation, and it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's an expensive approach to environmentally friendly approach to transportation,
but it's still
environmentally friendly.
Well, let me just throw in one thing about that bullet train.
Mm.
The way it's starting out is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Because where they're starting it is the Central Valley from a town, I believe it's Madera or Modesto, down to Bakersfield.
Bakersfield, there's a hole in the wall.
Yeah, Merced, Madera, and Modesto, all three of those are the same thing. They're smaller. They're smaller than Bakersfield.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to do that bullet train. They're starting it there. And the ridership will be so low, because the whole idea was to get the bullet train from the Bay Area to Southern Cal, which is because there's a lot of people who commute back and forth from those two areas for work. That's, you know, I mean, the airports around the Bay Area and Southern Cal are full on Mondays and Fridays because of that.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So,
so basically, like we had the Bridge to Nowhere in 2008. Now we've got the Train for No One in California.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, I you know, and their idea is that they'll get the ridership down there to pay for the next part, which would be, you know, between the greater Bay Area and the Southern Cal. And it's like, sure. Yeah, that'll happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Those farmers are all going to just want to jump on the train to get from, you know, one part of the Central Valley to the other end. Yeah.
Well, maybe they'll take the train
so
to get from one end of their crop field to the other.
it's a joke. It's what it is.
Your environmentalists out there in California, they want Brown to lead to take the lead of Andrew Cuomo from New York. Who banned fracking last year. But reports from the California Council of Science and Technology, they contend that the kind of fracking that you do out there in California is less risky, with little horizontal drilling to expose large areas underground to potential contamination. This still, of course, has a geological effect, because in California, it doesn't take much. I mean, you guys got some pretty shaky terrain out there.
Oh, yeah, we're sitting on those tectonic plates. So when they shift, when they shift, we feel it. But I've never known any of our quakes to be caused by fracking. We've never had anything like that I'm aware of. I've never heard anything about that. The only thing I will say about the environmentalists is that they get a little ridiculous sometimes. And the only thing that I'm against as far as the fracking is that, hey, stick to what you guys agreed to, and the state needs to hold its ground as far as dumping the wastewater into the aquifers that are used for drinkable water, especially considering that we have a drought.
I was surprised to hear that they actually authorized that 2,500 times. That actually floored me.
And they asked, then Brown asked the people of California to cut our water usage by 20%. Okay, why? So that you can, you know, give it away to the fracking companies?
Right.
You know, so, I mean, that's the problem I see. It's like, you know, it's twofold. It's, you know, you got over the top on one side and you've got corruption on the other.
Right. When you got corruption on both sides, you got some serious problems. Of course, in fracking and effect on earthquakes, I don't think we'll see that anytime soon. This is something that, you know, takes a geological effect over lots of time. I mean, the kinds of things that can happen underground, who knows? Especially if we do it over and over and over again, not just for a decade, but for decades and decades and decades. We may see an impact. I mean, they're having earthquakes in the east part of the country that we haven't had in forever.
Yeah. Right.
You know,
exactly.
So I mean, these are cause for concern, especially since over in the east and a little more, not quite the Tornado Valley area, but, you know, in the Dakotas too. I mean, they've been doing a lot of the fracking, but fracking's been going on in a lot of states, not just the Dakotas.
If it can be done safely, and of course earthquakes are, you know, that's questioning, is it safe? But I mean, in California, if it can be done safely and you're not wrecking the drinking water of, you know, millions of people, fine. But when you've been, you know, when you start doing that, you can't, you know, you're going to get some flack for it. So why do it?
Right.
Why do it?
I'll
tell you why. Because they can.
Yep.
Because all
they
have to do is pay off some people who work for, you know, the state government.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we really don't, though. And here's the problem I have with the environmentalists. We don't have viable sources of alternative energy, and we won't for the foreseeable future. At best, alternative energy is going to provide 15% of our energy needs within the next decade. So we can't go back to traveling by horse and buggy or reading by candlelight while we wait for alternative energy sources to catch up. A middle ground's needed, fracking provides it, and California knows it. And even if their esteemed representative from San Francisco, Queen Pelosi, won't admit it, It still is cheaper oil if we can get it domestically. We've always talked about weaning ourselves from our dependence on foreign oil. Here we
right.
are right here in the United States of America that's creating jobs right here in America, and we're bitching and moaning about it.
Mm-hmm.
I understand we want to make it safe, and we don't want to ruin our water. Of course, you know, I've been a firm believer that out there in California, you guys need to go to desalinization plants. That would create
right.
tons
and,
of jobs.
And they, I think they're building one in down south. I can't remember exactly where it's at. But it is very
yeah.
expensive, and I'm, you know, but it's like, okay, but what's the alternative here? You know, I mean, you've got a whole sea of water, so you do that
right.
or what? What are you going to do? Without water,
right.
I mean, because the weather is changing. And more than that, though, more than that, California has never managed their water correctly. They never have.
Yeah, I've heard people say that they need to control their use of water, and they don't. And then when they don't need to, they do, and it
yeah.
just all bass backwards. I've even read some stories about that, and it is something, you know, management of things is something that we always could do better. Now, you know, the environmentalists, they were hoping for a more aggressive approach from Brown when he returned to office in 2010. Brown's ballot measures committee last year, they accepted more than $600,000 from oil companies. And the energy
mm-hmm.
interests also gave nearly $200,000 to his reelection campaign that he didn't even campaign that much.
Yeah,
for.
He didn't. He didn't campaign at all. He didn't even have one. I don't remember seeing one commercial.
Well, that's $800,000. That's $800,000, nearly $1 million for a guy who didn't even campaign very much. And so it's hard to believe that Jerry Brown isn't beholden to the big oil companies when you see those kinds of figures, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people still say that he's not beholden and support him in that. So, you know, what
kind of,
you
know, I mean, he's in his last term. He's, you know, he's getting older, and he's almost – kind of got a somewhat of an attitude like, oh, balls to the walls.
Right. You know. And, you know, and it looks like our president is doing some of that, too. So maybe that's just a thing with people that are in the last part of their last term.
Could be.
Yep.
You know, why not? What do you got to lose?
You know, I just don't know.
Anyway, I wanted to throw my two bits in, and I've thrown my two bits in, so...
I appreciate
for you,
the call,
for,
Melinda.
Yeah.
Listen, call back again. It was a lot of fun. Now, did I bite?
You know.
You like it?
Yes, you bite, but that's all right. I bite back, so.
Well, thanks for the call. It was enjoyable, and I hope to hear from you again soon.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye.
That was Melinda from California. How did I know she was going to be from California? I can make these kinds of calls with an intuition. But speaking of pot, like we were talking earlier, let's talk about the IRS. I don't know how the two are related, but they're not. I just felt like connecting them. Tax day is just a few days away, and look. The IRS has been up to no good again. From a Politico article yesterday, on April the 12th, 2013, the IRS seized every penny of a nearly $1 million business account held by Georgia gun shop owner Andrew Clyde. Now, before my mind goes crazy here that this guy was targeted because he is a gun shop owner, I'm going to ignore that for a minute because... it may or may not be true. It's probably not. Okay, but his name's Andrew Clyde. His misdeed, here's what he did. This is crucial, folks, because this is heinous. This is like, there are so many people in jail for far less things than what this man did. He deposited business checks into his bank account in increments of $10,000. That's what he did. Now, House Republicans on Wednesday preparing to shine a spotlight on the government's practice of seizing small businesses' civil assets without charging them with a crime. is signaling a new oversight focus on the issue, and it's gaining more attention. Did you know the IRS could do this? Just seize your account before they declare that you owe them money, or even do an audit, or even ask you, what's up? Their Gestapo powers are even greater than I thought, and I knew they were great. Now, there is a strong indication that the IRS has been involved in civil forfeiture that has hurt innocent people, said the Committee Oversight Subcommittee Chairman, that's Representative Peter Roskam from Illinois, Republican from Illinois, in a brief interview, calling it an abuse by the federal government against its citizens. You know, those middle classers. Yeah, them. Now, it's the first hearing for the Illinois Republican who takes over the panel that the past year focused nearly exclusively on the IRS Tea Party targeting controversy. The lawmaker has spent recent weeks hounding the agency on a series of issues, from the agency hiring previously fired workers to its contract with a failed Obamacare vendor. Now, although this seizure issue crosses several agencies, Roskam's panel will narrow. They're going to square in on the IRS, bringing in small business owner witnesses who had their money taken without warning, while the House Judiciary Committee is holding a separate hearing at the same time from the Justice Department's perspective. Folks, this has been going on for a long time. I'll tell you a story I heard. I tried to find the names of these people today, but it's from several decades ago, so I couldn't find it. But I remember listening to the radio. I used to listen to talk radio. That's how I got my start of even being interested in doing what I'm doing now. Back in the 90s, local show, and there was a guest on the radio. Her and her husband were in the fine art business. That perked my ears because when I was a kid, my parents were in the art business. That's how I grew up. This lady said that the IRS was suspicious of a sale of a single piece of art that sold back in the 80s for a huge sum of money. They seized their assets. The IRS seized their assets without accusation, saying that they were conducting an investigation. With their business on the rocks, they had no money for lawyers, and none would take their case on contingency. They were at the mercy of the IRS, which stood firm on their $400,000 demand for back taxes and several years of penalties and interest. Now, the burden of proof was on them, guilty until they proved themselves innocent, just like you're hearing in this story today. After a year of back and forth with no money to fight and on the verge of losing their home, they agreed to pay the $400,000 demand from the IRS. The husband was not part of this interview because shortly after settling, he took his own life. He had a 4-year-old life insurance policy for $2 million. The 2-year suicide clause had expired, and he made what his wife called in this interview a business decision. The funds saved the house, the business, and his family. Suddenly, now that she had money, lawyers were willing to take her case and help her. Now, within a year, she had cleared her name, and more importantly, her husband's name. The IRS paid her back all the money that they had paid to them, and then some. But this man had to kill himself before the IRS could be put in their place. That is the Gestapo power the IRS possesses. Anyway, back to the story. The IRS, which will send Commissioner John Koskinen to testify before the Ways and Means Committee, says that it is addressing the problem. You know, they just see it as a little problem. Having announced last October that it would scale back the practice after the New York Times deep dive on the matter. So you see, this is what it takes, a deep dive by a powerhouse like the New York Times, or the IRS would just keep doing what they're doing to people. And they aren't going to stop it. They're just going to scale it back. The agency says that it'll seize only assets of those they believe are engaging in illicit activities such as fronts for drug cartels, terrorists, or money launderers, which is what they should have done in the first place. it will tell Ways and Means Committee that it's planning to publish the new policy in the Internal Revenue Manual, according to one panel source briefed on the matter, although the IRS will caution that it will take years to make a change to their manual. And it's unlikely to satisfy the panel. This is all unlikely to satisfy the panel, particularly the GOP, which has noticed an uptick in such activity in recent years and wants to know why they ever did this in the first place. And rightly so. It's a great question. Under the law, banks must report cash bank deposits of $10,000 or more to the federal government, a provision aimed at catching illicit traffickers. The criminals have tried to sidestep the reporting requirement by slyly keeping their deposits under $10,000 threshold that triggers the reports, a practice called structuring, and that too is also illegal. Now, the IRS and other agencies that engage in the practice, such as the DEA or the FBI, has a sweeping authority to take assets, only having to prove preponderance of evidence, and that is one of the weakest levels it's the lowest. It's not the highest, it's the lowest. I mean, this is like almost nothing. You need almost nothing. Here's, and let me give you an example. They don't have to charge anyone with a crime or present any evidence that shows guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, but you can get a seizure warrant solely by presenting bank statements showing that a business has deposited amounts under $10,000. All they got to do is show a judge a bank statement with a deposit under $10,000, and they get these seizure warrants. You understand this. If you make deposits over $10,000, those are reported and they're watching you. If you make deposits just under $10,000, they're watching you. No proof of anything illicit required. Of course, the critics are saying that that shows nothing, and they're right. The broad power was aimed at making it easier to catch the bad guys. Cool. Understand that. There's all kinds of laws that we do that have all kinds of aims, but then they run amok, and you can't let them run amok. But the IRS in recent years has used this authority to net small business owners they believe could be intentionally keeping deposits under $10,000 to avoid the reporting requirement. Now, there's a bipartisan backing to this practice. That makes me go, Makes you wonder how many politicians are keeping their deposits under $10,000 to avoid the reporting requirements. Anyway, that's a whole other story. Senator Rand Paul, and everyone knows him, but Representative Tim Walberg, he's the Republican from Michigan. Last month, they introduced a bipartisan legislation to increase the level of proof needed for seizures. Now, the former Ways and Means Chair, David Camp, from Michigan, and ranking Democrat Sandra Levine from Michigan, dropped similar legislation last year. The IRS, between 2005 and 2012, seized more than $242 million for suspected structuring violations in more than 2,500 cases, according to the data update from the Freedom of Information Act request by the Institute for Justice. That's a conservative nonprofit representing a number of individuals affected by the practice. It made 639 such seizures in 2012. That was up from 114 in 2005. And according to the group, which will testify on Wednesday, at least a third of such seizures resulted simply because the businesses were making multiple bank deposits under $10,000. They say no other criminal activity was ever alleged. The IRS will provide new data at the hearing Wednesday, but they did not offer a comment on this story. Those caught up in the storm have a tough job showing that they didn't do anything wrong, but sometimes they don't get to even see a judge at all, if not for years. The burden of proof basically shifts. It's incumbent on the small business to prove that they are innocent, said Kevin Brown. He's a former acting IRS commissioner who was flabbergasted by the way the policy was being used on small businesses. That's what happened with Clyde, the owner of Clyde Armory. He kept his deposits under $10,000. Get this, folks. He kept his deposits under $10,000 because his insurance limited coverage for losses due to robbery over $10,000. According to his testimony obtained by Politico, and that is all that they should have had to say to the IRS. The reason I keep my deposits below $10,000 is because of the loss limits of my insurance policy and showed them the policy, and that's it. But no, the IRS didn't even ask. They just seized. After the IRS seized his $940,000, $313 bank account, he ended up settling to pay $50,000 to avoid public dispute that could hurt his business and reputation. He will tell the panel this when he goes before them. He spent $149,000 on legal bills trying to get his money back. So $149,000, he settled for $50,000. So out of his $940,000 that the IRS stole with no reason, cost him $200,000. So he had to give up $200,000 to get $940,000 back. How many small businesses can handle that kind of loss and survive? How many should suffer that kind of loss at the hands of this Gestapo, KGB-style agency, regardless of whether they can survive or not? Well, Splash, they settled. Doesn't that imply guilt? No, it doesn't. Small businesses often end up settling for three reasons. It can hurt their public image. It can take years to unfreeze assets. And it costs money to fight back. Jeff Hirsch, who will also testify, fought for 2.5 years with his brother against the IRS to get back more than $446,000 worth of assets the IRS seized from his family business in May of 2012. They never got to bring their case before a judge because the government never started the forfeiture proceeding. Locking up the assets used to operate their Long Island-based company that distributes snacks for convenience local stores. They just froze their assets and let them sit there. They relied extensively on credit, paid $25,000 to hire an outside auditing firm to dig through their books, and another $25,000 in lawyer bills. 3 weeks ago, the IRS dropped the case. It returned the funds without any interest and without ever charging the brothers with any crime. Did you hear that? No crime and no interest. The seizure is crime right there. That's the crime. Now, how many of you have ever been backbilled by the IRS and seen the interest they charge from the time of the infraction, which is usually like way back when and it's usually a mistake, all the way until the time they found it? They always charge interest. They're not paying these guys interest. They're out of their minds. But some can't afford to wait like Hirsch did, and some don't have the credit line like his business had. Randy Sowers, also set to appear Wednesday, he decided that he and his wife could not operate their Maryland-based dairy farm. This one's going to just blow your mind. Their dairy farm and creamery, they could not operate it without their capital after the IRS took their entire business account balance of more than $62,000. They settled immediately, forfeiting $29,500. They settled so they could survive. Is this how we treat our small businesses in middle-class economics? Now, I'm not saying that this is Obama's fault, although it has been way worse under his watch, as you will see. But maybe he should pick up that phone of his and dial 1-800-829-1040 and wait on hold for about 30 minutes like us average blokes do, and go through a lengthy verification process like us average folks do, and then rip them a new asshole. I'm just saying. And get this. According to Sauer's testimony, when his attorney asked why the fine was so steep, the U.S. Attorney General's office responded that the other asset forfeiture victims got off easier because they did not give an interview to the press. So this was a punishment, this $29,500 forfeiture, which was nearly half of what the IRS seized from them, $62,000. Sowers had talked to the Baltimore-based newspaper, which ran a story on his predicament. So for that, they got only half of their money back. That is a disgrace, folks, an absolute disgrace. The IRS had said from now on, it will only focus on seizing the assets of those suspected of illicit activity unless it is an exceptional circumstance. But at least two former IRS experts weren't sure how they could even classify which accounts were illegal and which ones weren't upon initial inspection and seizure. How do you know until you do an investigation? This is such a violation of due process of the law. Republicans intend to also push the IRS to apply the recent policy change retroactively, giving businesses that settled in recent years the opportunity to reopen their cases and get some of that reprieve back. Now, hopefully, total reprieve plus interest. Of course, once you've been anally excavated by this Gestapo, the IRS, who really wants to reopen that can of worms? Unbelievable stuff. The Elmos will also be seeking more information for the hike in asset seizures in 2012 and 2013. While the number of IRS seizures between 2005 and 2014 often averaged around 1,500 total, they reached more than 3,000 during 2012 and 2013. Each year, more than 3,000. It decreased again in 2014. So the Republicans want to know why they doubled and then dropped again. IRS will say that the recent drop is because it scaled back its resources, according to a panel briefed on the position that they'll take. Yeah, I'll tell you, it was probably because they had been slammed in 2013, 2014 with that huge targeting of conservative group scandal. That's why they started watching their P's and Q's in 2014. But, oh my goodness. The GOP also wants to know the percentage of assets seized that were illicit and which ones were legally earned. And the IRS told the committee it does not have such a breakdown between what's called illegal sourced versus legal sourced cases. It makes you kind of wonder, did that hard drive crash too? I'm telling you, folks, this monster that hunts down and feeds upon our own citizens, our own fellow countrymen, needs to be done away with. And the best way to do that is to pass the fair tax. It would save us instantly $18 billion a year immediately by making the IRS disappear. They and gives individuals and businesses everywhere relief from the anxiety that they very mention of the IRS's name conjures up. And speaking of conjuring up anxiety, let's talk war, shall we? I think we shall. Whoops, not the one I was looking for. Bonk. I'm such a professional. Okay, Obama said, Politico is, oh, by the way, if you want to talk about the IRS, give me a call, 215-383-5730. If you want to talk about the new war powers that Obama is requesting, 215-383-5730. That was the same number both times, folks. Politico is reporting that President Barack Obama is asking Congress for a three-year authorization of war against, I hate this name that they use, and when especially when they spread it out for these monsters, ISIS. I'm not gonna say all those words. It's just disgusting. I'm not the mysterious type. Anyway, he's asking the three-year authorization of war against ISIS that would restrict. I love this. Would restrict the U.S. military from engaging in enduring offensive ground combat operations, according to the text circulating on Capitol Hill on Wednesday morning. Enduring offensive ground combat operations. Combat operations. Folks, If Congress approves this, this is an explicit permission to put combat boots on the ground. All you got to do is make sure that any mission you send them on isn't enduring. This is yet another hamstring placed on the military by a civilian government as they try to accomplish our stated goal, which at this point is to degrade and ultimately destroy ISIS. Obama is faced with so many people, right and left, Smurf and Elmo, and three former Secretaries of Defense, as well as his incoming Secretary of Defense, Ash Carter, all who have said ground troops may be required, are required. They give all variations of that. But Obama boxed himself in by declaring he would not use American combat troops. So he sat down like Winnie the Pooh on the log, tapping his head in the backyard of the White House. Think, 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 think. And this is what he came up with. No enduring offensive ground combat operations. So, as long as we don't give them an enduring mission of offense, then the combat boots on the ground will be completely permissible and at the sole discretion of the president. You know what this is? What we are witnessing here, a new war strategy is being born. I call it the hokey pokey strategy. Here we go. This is what the disclaimer was for. You put your soldiers in, you put your soldiers out, you put your soldiers in, and you jerk them all about. You do the hokey pokey and you spin their brains around. That's what it's all about. No enduring offensive combat operations, indeed. So does this get Obama out of the corner? Well, let's see. The draft authorization, which Congress is likely to begin considering after next week's recess, would also repeal the 2002 authorization for use of military force that allowed George W. Bush administration to launch the Iraq War. The 2001 AUMF, used to justify the war against terror in Afghanistan and other countries, a subject of Democratic concern, would remain in place. The draft war authorizes the authorization targets ISIL as well as individuals and organizations fighting for and on the behalf of or alongside the terror group, and also targets any closely related successor entity. That is broad. Obama argued in a letter accompanying the text that the growing threat of ISIS and Islamic militants in general in the Middle East mandates that Congress work with the White House to strengthen the country's authorization to combat ISIS. Remember now, Obama once called ISIS a junior varsity team. The so-called Islamic, oh my God, you know, he still can't do it. He still can't call them what they are, Islamic, Muslims. He has no problem calling out Christians for their misdeeds over 1,000 years ago or 200 years ago, but these are only so-called Muslims. Do you think this so-called avoidance doesn't irritate and motivate ISIS in their recruiting efforts? They are Muslims. It's in their name, the Islamic State. That Obama and Kerry and everybody uses, that drives me nuts. It's right there in their name. Anyway, don't let me reword what the president said. The so-called Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant poses a threat to the people and stability of Iraq, Syria, and the broader Middle East, and to the U.S. national security. It threatens American personnel and facilities located in the region and is responsible for the death of U.S. citizens, Obama wrote. He added, if left unchecked, ISIS will pose a threat beyond the Middle East, including the United States homeland. They already have. You saw, Mr. President, what happened in France last month, right? Oh, yeah. You skipped it. I forgot. My bad. Some JV team. Nope. Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Bob Corker from Tennessee Elmo said that he will soon move to hold rigorous hearings and propose the AUMF before his committee votes on the war authorization. But he said Wednesday morning that Obama's work is not done, even though Capitol Hill has finally received a draft text 6 months into the conflict with ISIS. Corker says it also will be important that the president exert leadership, lay out a clear strategy for confronting the threat posed by ISIS, and do the hard work of making the case to the American people why this fight is necessary and one that we must win. All things, by the way, that the Smurfs, including Obama, were demanding of GWB. So there isn't any reason why Obama shouldn't be expected to have to do this. Now, Corker will convene a special meeting with the Senate Republicans on Wednesday afternoon to discuss the AUMF and their approach to it. Meanwhile, look at how the Smurfs try to put this on the Elmos. Adam Schiff, Democrat from California, and Tim Kaine from Virginia. Quickly scheduled a news conference on the authorization of the use of force. And they said, Schiff said in a statement that the proposed language from the administration strips Congress of excuses for any further delay of debate and vote on a new authorization. Suddenly, it's an emergency. How does that saying go? Don't think that your lack of preparation is now suddenly my emergency. This will be debated, as the article has said, as soon as the Senate reconvenes. So, of course, the Smurfs are now going to say that there is no reason for delay, now that there is no delay. What a bunch of bird brains. It was their president that called ISIS a JV team. Last year, while they were marching openly across the desert, executing civilians and beheading people, ISIS was much smaller. They were sitting ducks in the open desert, daring Obama to bomb them. But he called them a JV team. So to be fair to the little kiddies, he hid his eyes and counted to 6 months to give them a chance to find their hiding places, just to be fair. Now, we've got to have patience, according to Secretary of State Kerry, and a 3-year commitment to a war that Obama will hand to the next president. Now, did Obama appreciate being handed 2 ongoing wars to begin his presidency? Obama campaigned to end wars. He won the Nobel Peace Prize before ever creating a single moment's peace. Then he created 3 new wars since he's been in office. Hey, President Obama, Norway called. They want their priest prize back. Give it back. Obama-er. Obama said he is still committed to repealing the 2001 AUMF, which authorized the bulk of the military operations that followed 9/11 terrorist attacks. Democrats are broadly skeptical of continuing to use the authorization as legal justification in the ISIS conflict. Enacting an AUMF that is specific to the threats posed by ISIS would serve as a model of how we can work together to tailor the authorities granted by the 2001 AUMF, Obama wrote. Now remember, folks, the Elmos don't mind approving a war effort. They love a good war. Or even committing American troops to get the job done, as long as there's an effective strategy. It is the Smurfs that have been dragging their feet. But suddenly, the proposal might not be enough to quell Democrat concerns. Chris Van Hollen, Democrat from Maryland, who is playing an integral role in the Democrats' negotiations with the White House, he says he has serious concerns about the proposed draft. It provides overly broad, which I already said is broad, fresh authority for the deployment of U.S. ground forces in combat operations in Iraq, Syria, and any other country which ISIS or its affiliates may be operating. See, even the Smurfs know that this is authorization to use combat ground troops, not just in Iraq, not just in Syria, but in any country ISIS or its affiliates may, may be operating. Folks, this is a much bigger authorization for war than the president makes it out to be when he calls it a model to tailor authorities granted by the 2001 AUMF. This would authorize the president to send ground troops into 12 different Middle Eastern countries, as well as every country where ISIS has a recruiting operation, including apparently France, where ISIS clearly operates from the inside. Second, it leaves in place indefinitely the blank check. This is Holland again, Van Holland. The blank check authority granted to the executive in the 2001 AUMF. It makes little sense to place reasonable boundaries on the executive war powers against ISIS while leaving them unchecked elsewhere. Of course it does. Who ever knows what a war is going to cost? What doesn't make sense is to give the military a mission to destroy and then hamstring them with budgetary constraints and concerns. That doesn't make sense. What it is, what is it? It's some kind of Google, is it some kind of Google ad campaign? Okay, I'm going to make this many hits until I reach my budget of X. This is a war campaign, not an ad campaign. Let our military do its job. Forget the blank check talking point. This is how you wage war. Let the military design the strategy to meet the goal. Let them present that strategy without a budgetary commitment. Then let Congress debate and vote on whether or not ISIS is worth being exterminated at any cost. Any cost. If they don't believe this, if they don't believe it's worth it at any cost, then what are we doing over there? Get the fuck. If we are not all in, then we need to be all out. So which is it? Destroy ISIS? Or accept our pussification and go home? Which is it? Van Hollen said that he is eager to avoid dragging the United States into another unnecessary ground war in the Middle East. Did you hear that, folks? Unnecessary. There's your answer. I asked the question, is ISIS worth exterminating at any cost? And Van Hollen, Smurf senator from Maryland, answered it in a single word, unnecessary. Why even debate this? Just get the fuck out. If we are starting this debate with anyone in Congress already on the mindset that defeating ISIS is or even may be unnecessary, then our war effort will already lack the kahunas it needs to be waged successfully. Get the fuck out. Comments like these highlight the upward struggle the White House will face among House Democrats who are deeply troubled by the Iraq War and have little appetite to see U.S. troops return en masse to the Middle East. So earlier in the article, you had some Smurfs puffing up their chests. We need to debate this without delay and hold a vote and give our president the authorization he needs. But now we see that again, the Smurfs are the holdup. Just like they smacked down Obama Hood, he smacked them around over the 529 college fund tax. So, too, will they smack Obama around for being a warmonger. That's right, a warmonger. Make no mistake, folks, Obama is a warmonger. He just isn't very good at it. That is why we need to let our military do the job that they were designed to do, free of the shackles of make love, not war, idiocy, and the military incompetence of a president that so seriously misunderstood ISIS to be a JV team. Schiff, the top Democrat on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, was also critical of the White House proposal because it lacked its lack of repeal of the 2001 AUMF. A new authorization should also include a sunset of the 2001 AUMF. Without one, any sunset of a new authorization will be ineffectual, since the next president can claim continued reliance on the old one. Which means, as President Obama had months ago alluded to, that he already had the authority to go after ISIS. So what are we doing here? What is the point? Why are they wasting our time? Schiff said, that not sunsetting the 2001 AUMF would fail to meet the goal set by the president last summer when he argued that the old authorization should be redefined, refined, and ultimately repealed. So that's the reason that we are wasting our time on this. Obama, the war-ending president, set a goal to repeal the old Bush AUMF. Unfortunately, this goal, a pledge really, by Obama, the war-ending president, is creating a problem for Obama, the warmongering president. Look, Obama vowed not to send in combat troops. He is now asking for authorization to do just that, not just in Iraq, but anywhere. Of what importance is the repeal of a silly old AUMF, even if it was gained by George W. Bush? Obama may need it. Remember how hard Obama, the candidate, campaigned against the Patriot Act? But as soon as he became president, he did nothing to change that because he may need those powers as, in fact, he expanded the Patriot Act powers until they blew up in his face with the CIA gathering information scandal. These reversals by various personalities of this president, Obama the campaigner, Obama the war-ending president, Obama the warmonger, these 180s are a natural byproduct of incompetence. You box yourself in because you spoke too soon, and now you don't know quite how to get your feet out of your mouth. Democrats are also expected to have concerns over geographic limitations in the White House proposal. There's no geographical limitations. There's none. Obama wants the authorization to send troops anywhere and everywhere. What limitations? There are no limitations. Maybe that is what's so upsetting to the Smurfs. They don't feel comfortable giving carte blanche even to one of their own. In a nod to Democrat concerns, Obama stressed his appeal to lawmakers that the draft proposal would not authorize long-term, large-scale ground combat operations like those our nation conducted in Iraq and Afghanistan. I've got two words for you, President Obama. 3 years. That is long-term. You are prohibiting enduring offensive combat operations, enduring being the key word. You just need to call a timeout to fit that requirement. And what is every country where ISIS and or its affiliates may be operating if it isn't large scale? The local forces, rather than the U.S. military forces, this is Obama, writing in his letter that accompanied the request, should be deployed. Local forces rather than U.S. military forces should be deployed to conduct such operations, Obama wrote. The authorization I propose would provide the flexibility to conduct ground combat operations in other, more limited circumstances, such as rescue operations involving U.S. or coalition personnel or the use of special operations forces to take military action against ISIS leadership. Military action against ISIS leadership, please. This is starting to sound a lot like the snooze jobs that the Smurfs say W laid on us. The local forces are inept. They're incompetent. Look at what happened in Yemen. One of the many countries that the AUMF would give Obama the authority to send troops to. Look at how the Iraqi forces tucked tail and skedaddled, leaving all the military hardware we gave them for ISIS to add to their arsenal. Look at how long it is taking us to even get started training a mere 5,000 moderate insurgents in Saudi Arabia. Obama knows that he knows that he knows that degrading and ultimately defeating ISIS, as non-combative as that strategy is not going to be successful without ground troops. Everyone is telling him that. U.S. ground troops on the ground and on the offensive. He is trying to edge his way out of the corner that he backed himself into while trying to sate his liberal base. It won't be easy, but this is authorization to send in ground troops wherever he deems necessary is the first step to doing just that. And you know what? In 2 years, Obama may be handing over this 3-year authorization to an Elmo. Ooh, wouldn't that be terrible? And speaking of war, as we let's speak more of war. As I was gathering my thoughts today about the president's request for authorization to wage war and doing my research on that, the following story from AP Wire jumped out at me. The AP reports that the Global Chemical Weapons Watchdog on Wednesday, this past Wednesday, condemned the use of chlorine as a weapon in Syria as a breach of international law and said those responsible should be brought to justice. The Executive Council of the Organization for Prohibition of Chemical Weapons expressed serious concern that a fact-finding mission recent report concluded with a high degree of confidence that chlorine was unleashed on three villages in northern Syria from April to August last year, killing 13 people. This decision makes it absolutely clear that chemical weapons are illegal and that their use will not be tolerated under any circumstances, the organization director general Ahmet Uzamuge said in his statement. Yeah, these guys can't get easier names. Syria joined the OPCW in 2013 and declared a 1,300-ton chemical weapons arsenal that has since been destroyed, so far as we know. We hope there's no other chemical weapons that they did not declare. However, chlorine is not, here's the answer to your question in the chat room, chlorine is not a chemical that has been declared to the OPCW because it is also used for regular purposes in industry like chlorinating swimming pools. So the fact-finding mission report did not appropriate blame for the attacks, but said 32 of 37 people interviewed saw or heard the sound of helicopters over the village at the time of the attack with barrel bombs containing toxic chemicals. So the British Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond said earlier reports similar findings linking chlorine attacks to helicopters, corroborating allegations that Assad regime is continuing to use chemical weapons in Syria in violation of the Chemical Weapons Convention. Syria denies using chlorine or other chemical weapons and blames terrorists for such attacks, even though terrorists don't have helicopters. I was reading up on this, and it's not that they can't get a chopper on the black market if they wanted one, but it would cost more than it's worth to them. Also, to be useful, they would need more than one helicopter to be a force. One chopper wouldn't cut it, and it would be targeted and cut to ribbons if the jihadists could even fly it. So aircraft leave a signature. They're easy to spot. They don't blend in with the civilian population like these guys like to do. Aircraft also require facilities. When terrorists have those things, including facilities, they are quickly identified and destroyed. None of this would be conducive to the guerrilla warfare that they like to wage. Captured aircraft by the terrorists, they make more of a trophy for them to dance around and make a recruiting video, rather than being of any military use to them at all. Syria moved to join the OPCW in 2013. That was widely seen as averting U.S. airstrikes in the aftermath of the chemical attack on Damascus suburb that killed hundreds of civilians. The U.S. Western allies accused Syrian government of being responsible for the attack, while Damascus blamed the rebels. Now it appears they are using chlorine to continue their chemical campaign. So about that red line, we haven't heard that much about it lately. Just as Syria joined OPCW and destroyed its large stockpile of chemical weapons, so too did Obama rely on Russia's intervention to get him out of that tight spot of that red line. Syria has used chemical weapons and was deserving of the promised retaliation. Joining a club, giving away your toys, and swearing never to do it again is the thing of children. And they never don't do it again, do they? So Syria has got me thinking. If this new authorization to use military force gives Obama overly broad, fresh authority for the deployment of U.S. ground forces in combat operations in Iraq, Syria, and other countries where ISIS or its affiliates may be operating, then who's to say that we can't turn that force on Assad. Does Obama even have the kahunas that would take? I wonder. Well, that's a wrap for tonight's show, folks. That's a wrap for tonight's show. My pond will reopen next week on Monday, and we'll be there Monday through Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Check the website to see what's up for Monday night's show, 1111broadcasting.com. I hope you'll join us, and until next week, have a great weekend, and by all means, do what you love and love what you do. Good night, everybody.